For a second time today, I invite you to turn to John's Gospel, this time to the next chapter, so John chapter 4. If you weren't here this evening, we looked at John chapter 3 and considered Jesus' conversation with Nicodemus, a Pharisee. And now in John chapter 4, Jesus is having a conversation with somebody on the opposite end of the spectrum. We had this religious Pharisee who we would perceive to be a good person in the morning. This evening, we have somebody complete opposite. We have a woman who comes across as promiscuous. She is somebody that we today would see as maybe very bad. But nevertheless, Jesus takes the time even to converse with her. And what I want us to look at this evening are three lessons that Jesus gives in evangelism. Jesus talks to her, and as we look through this conversation, I want us to look at how Jesus deals with her. The first thing we'll see is he simply has the courage to make contact with her. The second thing we see is that Jesus is completely honest with her about her needs. And the third and final thing that we see Jesus do is that he gets to Jesus. He ends the conversation by talking about himself. We, of course, don't do that. We don't talk about ourselves. We get to Jesus, just like Jesus does here. So let's look at this. Let's look at this passage. Jesus makes contact with her. Okay, this is the early part of the passage. Jesus makes contact with her. We read that Jesus, he has to leave the region of Judea, and he's going to Galilee. And we read, don't we, that he had to go through Samaria. That would have been the shortcut, so you'd have had Judea in the south, Samaria in the middle, Galilee in the north, and he would have had to have gone through Samaria. Now, I think there's a bit more here than just a geography. I think Jesus going through Samaria is entirely providential. He's meant to be going through Samaria because he is going to talk to this woman, and she in turn will draw people to him, and an entire village of Samaritans will be saved. So this is completely providential. That's why Jesus had to go through Samaria, as well as it just being geographically a shortcut for him. And the lesson for us here is that no one that we meet in our lives, no one that we are friends with, no one in our family, no one that we might sit down next to and end up having a conversation with is there by accident. God has placed them there in our lives for us to share the good news of Jesus Christ with them. And so Jesus and his disciples, we read, they get to the town of Sychar, which is in central Samaria. And it is here that this conversation takes place. John notes at the end of verse 8 that the disciples, they've gone into the city to buy food, which is probably a good thing, because I think they'd have been very much a hindrance when Jesus was conversing with this woman. So the disciples, they're out of the picture. In verse 6, we read that Jesus is tired, he's wearied from the journey, and he sits down by the well on his own. And this is an amazing detail. This is a little bit off point, but this is an amazing detail. The fact that Jesus got tired, it shows us that Jesus, yes, he is fully divine, but we, in his incarnation, he's fully human. He gets us. He knows what it is to be human. And so Jesus knows what it is to be tired. He knows what it is to struggle with everything that we struggle with. The big difference is he never sinned, but he is able to sympathize with us should we come to him. And so he's wearied, he's sitting by the well. And in verse 7, we see that this Samaritan woman comes to draw water from the well. And this is where Jesus makes his first contact with her. It would have been easy, wouldn't it, just to allow her to do what she was doing, for him to ignore her. She draws water, she goes back home, and nothing is said. But Jesus takes the opportunity here to talk to her. And it's a very simple introduction, isn't it? He pretty much says, "Here's a well, I'm quite thirsty, can I have a drink, please?" Her response, verse 9, is one of complete and utter surprise. Look at what she says in verse 9. "How is it that you, a Jew, ask for a drink from me, a Samaritan woman?" And John puts the little detail at the end of that verse, "For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans." Jesus ignores and shatters all social etiquette here. He destroys everything that would have been expected of him, a Jewish man, and he engages a Samaritan in conversation. And we, as the story progresses, we will see that she is even an outcast among her own people, which makes Jesus' conversation with her even more remarkable. The fact that she is out at the sixth hour of the day, the hottest part, shows that she was the sort of person who probably didn't want to be seen. She didn't want attention drawn to her. She is very much an outcast. And she is the exact sort of person, isn't she, that Jesus came to this earth for. That's why he makes contact with her. That's why he converses with her. She is the sort of person that Jesus is inviting into his kingdom. In Mark 2, we read, don't we? Mark 2, 15 to 17. Jesus is just called Levi, that is Matthew, to be his disciple. And we read next, "As he reclined at table in his house, many tax collectors and sinners were reclining with Jesus and his disciples, for there were many who followed him. And the scribes and the Pharisees, when they saw that he was eating with tax collectors and sinners, said to his disciples, 'Why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners?' And when Jesus heard this, he said to them, 'Those who are well have no need of a physician, but only those who are sick. I came not to call the righteous, but sinners.'" And the point is this: because Jesus has come to call sinners, because he has come for the sick, because he ate and drank with them, because he offers eternal life to those who are lost in sin, because he shattered all social boundaries when he spoke to people, no one, absolutely no one, should be out of our scope when it comes to sharing the gospel. In other words, there is no room, is there, for snobbery in evangelism. And that's because God is gracious. He can save anyone. And so we should be sharing the gospel with people from all walks of life. We should never be picky about who we share Jesus with. Yet how often do we make ourselves the judge over someone else? We'd rather not talk to this person because they're not like us. We'd rather not invite this person to church because they'd cause problems. It's sinful when we do that, isn't it? No, Jesus spoke to anyone and everyone. He offered himself to the worst of sinners. His death on the cross covers the sins of the worst. And so no one is out of the scope of God's grace. And so we should never be picky about who we don't and do share the gospel with. So he makes contact with her, he talks to her, he engages her in conversation, despite who she is and despite who he is. The second thing we see Jesus do is that he is completely and utterly honest with her, isn't he? Jesus knows what it is she is chasing. He knows everything about her. When she goes back to the town, she tells the townspeople, "Come and see a man who told me everything I ever did." So Jesus knows everything about her. He knows her struggles. He knows what she is like. Now, we have no such skills when we talk to people, do we? Now, that's the point of friendship and engaging people in conversation. So we get to know them and we know how best to introduce Jesus to them. And it's here that Jesus introduces this idea of living water. That's there for us in verse 10. Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that is saying to you, 'Give me a drink,' you'd have asked him and he would have given you living water." He knows that she is somebody who is completely dissatisfied, and he is offering her what she needs spiritually. Jesus is using a really interesting tactic here. A few weeks ago, I went to a Christianity Explored conference up in Manchester, and Randy Newman was speaking, and he's written a book, Mere Evangelism, and his talks were loosely based on the chapters in his books. And he refers to this idea as something called pre-evangelism. It's where you build your evangelistic conversations from a point of agreement with somebody. So, for example, you could be standing in an art gallery and you might agree with somebody that a particular painting is beautiful. And he, Randy Newman uses C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity. We all know what it's like to hear people quarreling. That's how C.S. Lewis begins the book. And he begins it like that because we know there's a difference between right and wrong. That's the point of agreement. And what Jesus is doing here is effectively saying to her, wouldn't it be great if there was water that would quench our thirst forever? And she's like, yes, yes, it would. See, that's the point of agreement. Wouldn't it be great if we could be completely satisfied for life? Yes, yes, it would. You see, so he's agreeing with her here, and he builds from that. Now, I'm not saying we start all evangelistic conversations like this. You know, if you go up to somebody and you tell them, you're not satisfied, are you? They're going to be insulted, aren't they? And so you find common ground. So it could be the idea of human dignity, and you build from there. The beauty of love, and you build from there. It could be a sense of, you know, the deep sense of justice, and you build from there. And that's how you then introduce Jesus to them. You meet their needs when you agree with them. Anyway, Jesus's initial point we see is completely lost on her. Much like Nicodemus, she completely misses the point. Nicodemus in John 3 is told about being born again, and he thinks that Jesus is talking about physical birth. And she likewise is thinking that Jesus here is talking about physical water. So Jesus, verses 13 to 14, rephrases it for her. Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty, but whoever drinks the water I give him will never be thirsty. The water that I give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life. And so what Jesus is doing here is he is continuing to build up on this idea, isn't he? And now he gets personal with her. This is where he is completely honest with her. "Go," he says, "fetch your husband." Well, she doesn't like that, does she? He has put now his finger on the painful spot of her life. Now, this is absolutely essential in all evangelism. When we tell people about Jesus, we need to tell them why they need Jesus. So he puts his finger on the painful spot of her life. Now, he doesn't do this with any glee, I don't think. He doesn't do this like a Pharisee. Jesus was never a Pharisee. He doesn't do this with any judgmentalism. No, Jesus said to the crowds, "Come to me, you who are weary, and I will give you rest." But he is still completely honest about her spiritual condition. It's not acceptable for us, is it, who are believers, to look down on others who aren't, to look down on them with judgment, to look down on them with glee. But it doesn't mean that we we hold back, does it? We still show them why they need Jesus. We preach the whole gospel. We preach the whole counsel of God. But we never humiliate people in their brokenness. We gently point them to the issue, the problems in their life. We gently point them to the inconsistencies they have, and then point them towards Jesus as the answer to those issues. And the final thing we see here is that Jesus, he gets to Jesus, doesn't he? All his conversations end up with him talking about himself. Now, all this talk of her lifestyle was obviously a little bit too close to home. Verse 19, you'll see that she changes the subject. So Jesus says to her, well, you're right in saying you have no husband. You've had five husbands. The man you now live with is not your husband. And so the woman says to Jesus, I perceive you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, but you say that it is in Jerusalem is the place where people ought to worship. And so she now tries to change the subject. And it's here that Jesus sees, behind this topic, a direct route to him. See, she tries to, you know, get away from this subject. She doesn't want to talk about it, but he sees that this idea of where we should worship is a direct route to him. He can get to himself from this route. We ought to also be alert to these opportunities. When people we're talking to say something, and there's a direct route to Jesus, we go for it. We make a beeline to Jesus all the time. And Jesus actually answers her question here, doesn't he? Verses 10 and 13, he kind of changes the subject. He doesn't want to get involved in silly debates that will directing the conversation towards him. But here, he directs it now towards himself. You know, we sometimes, don't we, in our conversations with people, can get to the end of a gospel conversation and we haven't actually mentioned Jesus. We get caught up in debating somebody about the Big Bang or evolution or something like that. And by the time we get to the end of the conversation, not only have we completely lost them, not only have we failed to win them over to our way of thinking, but we haven't even mentioned Jesus. But here, Jesus, it makes a beeline for himself. He responds to her, verses 21 to 25. A woman, believe me, so she's just talked about where we should worship. Woman, believe me, the hour is coming where neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem will you worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. We worship what we do know, for salvation is from the Jews. Verse 23, but the hour is coming. The hour is coming and is now here where true worshippers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for the Father is seeking such people to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth. The woman said to him, I know the Messiah is coming. He who is called the Christ, when he comes, he will tell us all things. Verse 26, Jesus said to her, I who speak to you am he. So, she talks about where should we worship? He gives her an answer, and she says, maybe you're right. When the Messiah comes, when he comes, he'll explain everything to us. And it's here that Jesus reveals to her who he is. Verse 26, I, the one speaking to you, am he. You see, Jesus gets to Jesus in his gospel conversations. Remember this morning, John 3, Jesus ended up talking about the Son of Man being lifted up. Even there with Nicodemus, he got to himself. The conversation ended with him preaching the gospel and pointing to himself as the answer to the problem. Now, I wish I could have been there. Well, at the moment Jesus reveals to her who he is. Could you imagine her face? Could you imagine the moment she suddenly realizes she is talking to the Messiah, the one who can satisfy her thirst, the one who can satisfy all her desires? It's a bit like the scene, isn't it, in Pilgrim's Progress, where a Christian, he gets to the cross. The moment he gets to the cross, the burden that's on his back falls off. It's the same sort of experience for her. Her burden falls off, the scales fall off her eyes. Her thirst is quenched as she sees that she is talking to the Messiah. It's her conversion moment. You see, she finds in Jesus the answer to all her questions, to all her deepest desires. That's the reason we should aim to make a beeline for Jesus every time we talk to people and share the Christian faith with them. Because it's not only do people find life in Jesus, they find satisfaction, they find forgiveness, they find the answer to their deepest desires and longings. Yeah, we are so slow, aren't we, to talk about him to people. We pray that he will make us bold as we try and share this message with others, as we seek to hold Jesus out to a world that is deeply dissatisfied. We ask him to fill us with boldness and wisdom as we try to do that. So may we be bold enough to make contact with people. May we be gentle but honest as we seek to share him with people. And may we make a beeline to steer all conversations towards him, the one who can satisfy people's souls.